Hi, guys. We want to thank our great sponsor, Legion M. They are the first fan-owned entertainment company. We love working with them. They create really incredible experiences for people. If you're someone who wants to feel like you own a piece and are a piece of the industry, it's a great way to do it. They do meetups all over the country. They have a really cool community going online. I cannot recommend them enough. Go to legionm.com for more information.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and our guest today has been in quite a lot of them, and quite a lot of TV shows, and quite a lot of everything. She's one of the busiest working actresses around, and has been for a while, which is belied by the fact that she fell into the Fountain of Youth and looks the same as she did when we first saw her.
Oh, my gosh. I'll take it.
Yeah. This is Alana Ubach. Welcome.
Hi. How are you doing?
I am the guy that yells at the TV when I see you.
What?
I'm that guy. I'm the one that, when watching Hung, shouted as soon as I saw you. Euphoria, shouted as soon as
I saw you.
I'm the one. I'm the one that yells really loudly.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I always tell my friends, if you get up to go pee, you will miss me. So please go to the restroom before you tune in to whatever you're watching that I'm in. But, you know, saying yes to everything, really, you know, you find yourself always working. But
yeah.
I've never been one to turn something down. Even maybe that's to a fault.
No,
actually, but
no,
who knows?
No. But I mean, that's the definition of a working actor.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
isn't it? I mean, I was a freelance writer. I have been, still am a freelance writer, and so I know that feeling of, gee, if I say no this time, maybe they won't call back the next time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I remember my father telling my manager, Margaret Pollock, who's been my manager since I was 15, when she signed me, he was just like, watch out with my daughter. She will put on a chicken suit and sell used cars if you ask her to for no pay. So, you know, I mean, it was just knowing that from the time I was a kid, I thought, well, I might as well just say yes to everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, in talking to your publicist, when I said, I've been watching Alana most of my life, she said, no. I said, yeah, the Torkelsons. I think I was 6 years old or something like that. But that's it. I have been watching you forever.
Oh, bless you.
And
bless you.
I am amazed by careers. I'll say it a million times. But you have been in so many important movies. I just turned 33. But everywhere in there. So whether it's Sister Act 2, which is one of the greatest movies ever made. Oh, my God. I love it so much. And every time I hear the Love Boat theme song, I think of you, of course.
Oh, my God. Bless you.
But whether it's that. But then you move into a movie like Waiting, which especially anybody in the waiting industry loves it. But it's one of my go-to, like, happy, relaxed movies.
Yeah.
And I can't count how many times I've put it on just because it makes me happy.
Did you ever wait tables?
Yeah,
okay.
I was a dishwasher.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I was a dishwasher.
So you were
that
in
was,
it.
I was in it. My God, was
to
I
her
in
elbows,
it.
Yes.
That's, yeah, exactly. I've still got scars.
Wow, but, swam the belly of the whale.
Which, but all of those things. Legally Blonde, of course, which, especially because Reese Witherspoon loves it so much, doesn't go away.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But to be in all these different things, and then as I say, to see you in Hung, which made me so happy.
Thank you.
But now you're like a MILF.
Oh,
that's
thank
the thing.
You.
You're playing MILF roles. You know you are.
Well, you know, as soon as I turned 40, it was all about the mom roles because those were the roles. Those are the roles that you grab.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had read the Euphoria script about a year ago, and, you know, all of these great roles for kids were in it. And I thought, okay, there's got to be something. Oh, who's this drunk mom? That'll work. And, I remember thinking to myself when I was in my mid-30s, I thought, well, if I'm going to play a mom, she has to be a little dysfunctional.
Yeah.
There has to be something off kilter about the mom. Otherwise, you know, I'll just be walking and talking for
right.
a living in my
right.
40s. But, you know, so long as there's some kind of layer or weird something or another about the mother, I'll do it.
Now.
Sure.
I think I first saw you. I'm trying to remember whether it was on Beekman's World.
Yes,
so
the science
which
show.
Some friends of mine worked on, or a little film that I like called Clock Watchers.
Oh, yes.
Where you were part of a great quartet of office workers with Lisa Kudrow, Toni Collette, and Parker Posey. And the
yes.
four of you
I was at Sharky's having dinner with my 2-year-old just the other day, and I ran into the Sprecher sisters who wrote and directed.
Oh,
Jill
wow.
Sprecher wrote and directed Clock Watchers. And that was something I did. I think they hired me when I was around 19. And it was amazing because to me it was sort of the beginning of me starting a career as an adult because I started acting professionally when I was 13. So to start, you know, playing more adult roles, I thought, oh, wow, I have to start all over again. So this is a nice little lift off being in a movie like this. Yes, you are like the fourth or fifth fiddle, but you are surrounding yourselves by a bunch of actresses who are established as adults.
Yeah. And with a female writer-director.
With a female writer-director, sure.
Before it was cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Before it was cool.
Before it was like the thing to do.
That's right. But that is what makes it interesting and crazy, even as a movie or a TV watcher, that it makes sense because obviously I've gotten older since I started watching you.
Sure.
So it makes sense that I saw you as high school and now I see you as mom. But it still sort of blows your mind when you think about somebody as, no. She's my age. She's a kid.
Well,
oh, crap, I'm not a kid anymore.
Well, yeah, there you go. Like, it's little Easter egg moments that you watch on television where you're like, oh, that was when I was so-and-so. Yeah. That's when I fell in love with so-and-so. Or that was, you know, my first kiss was that television show or whatever.
Wow. The first time you see an actress or an actor that you've loved forever play a parent is kind of a strange moment.
Yes, it is.
Because you're like, really?
Yes, sure.
You know?
And that's certainly the reason why I make sure that the parent that I do play is a little effed up.
Yeah.
It's very important to me.
I'm in it.
Right? Wow.
Now, all right, let's do a total rewind.
Sure.
You grew up in Downey.
I grew up in Downey, California.
Beautiful Downey,
home
California.
Home of McDonald's.
Home of the oldest original McDonald's still standing, and Karen and Richard Carpenter.
Hey.
Of the Carpenters.
Yep.
They grew up around the corner from me.
Wow.
They were on Lubeck, and I was on Lester Ford. Yeah. And I would go trick-or-treating to Karen and Richard's house when I was a little kid. And I remember they were the one house that gave out the big bar, candy bars, and dollar bills.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
So my friend Jesse and I would be dressed up as, like, a witch and a ghost. And then we'd go back to my house and, like, you know,
that's so
dress up as a ballerina
funny.
And a bee, and we come back and see how much money we could make that night, trick-or-treating.
Hustler from day one.
Yeah, it was my friend Jesse's idea. He was like, wait a second.
Oh, my God. That is so funny.
I have an idea.
You're like, these shoes were purchased by the Carpenters.
Right, but thank you. Thank you, Karen, Richard.
Right.
But it really is a fun little town. And also Metallica. Metallica would be from Downey. The lead singer, I can't say his name off the top of
James
my head.
James Hetfield.
Thank you very much.
Hetfield.
There you go.
Hetfield.
That's it.
Okay.
Hetfield, yes.
I had a moment. It's in there.
That's it.
It's all in there.
That's that child.
It was also the home at one time of a Hopalong Cassidy Museum.
Really?
Which would have been of no interest to someone in your age bracket, but very much to me.
There you go, in Apollo.
And I came and visited, so there we are. Now, you started at 13. What launched you on a career? Was this something that you always, as a kid, just wanted to do?
My father and mother had a lithography shop in downtown Los Angeles. My father's from Puerto Rico, my mother's from Mexico. So having two parents as immigrants, they loved going to live shows.
Mm-hmm.
They loved going to concerts, and they'd take me to everything they went to. So my dad, he loved gambling, so we'd go out to Vegas constantly. And when he would win money at the crap table that day, he would splurge on getting like the best dinner seat to see Charo and Wayne Newton and Tony and Tennille, Captain and Tennille, right? And Gloria Estefan. And I remember being 3 years old and watching Captain and Tennille on stage and just thinking, do they go to the bathroom, these people? do they do anything besides this? When the curtain is drawn, are they put away in boxes?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't wrap my head around what these people were. But I remember my mom and dad telling me, oh, no, these are real artists, Alana. They rehearse and they sometimes write these songs and these lyrics. They study and they then perform in front of audiences. You know, there's going to be another audience tomorrow night that they'll be performing. They're just normal people, Alana. And I thought, wow. And all I could really think of, what it really grabbed me, was wanting to be something that was just not real. I wanted to be the lights. Huh. I just wanted to be the lights mm-hmm. on that stage. And to be like the and I always say this, the smell of the prime rib and the cigarette smoke in the air. That's what I wanted to be. That's all I can that's the only way I can explain it. So even now, I sort of have to remind myself of that time when I was a little kid saying, oh, be the lights. You should always want to be something that's not tangible. It should not be tangible. And the moment you say something like, oh, I want to be a billionaire, or I want to be a household name, or I want to be a brand. No, don't. That's too adult. That's way too adult. And it's going to keep you from performing the way you performed on the blacktop at school when no one was watching. Mm-hmm. The way you were playing cops and robbers. When you really watch kids playing in the playground, they're so committed. Mm-hmm. They're so committed. They don't break until the bell rings and they have to go and line up and go back into their classrooms. But if you can sustain that forever, then you'll be just fine, because the moment you grow up is when the ego gets involved and you allow yourself to get arrested by that. And that's when I think the artist gets in trouble. But you always have to remind yourself why you decided to do it in the first place. It's very important.
Yeah.
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 So, I mean, what a wonderful child's eye view of show business you had. I'm thinking it's too bad a kid today. The smoke is gone.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And the prime rib is now small plates.
Oh, no. It's small plates. Yes, very small plates. Yeah. Right.
The prime very rib expensive.
Better be grass fed.
It's quinoa.
Yes, there you go. It's quinoa.
I dream of being quinoa and vape. Vape smell. I want to be that pineapple vape.
There you go.
Lord.
It's funny, but you know, that Christmas, my mom and dad, my mom said that we were at Stonewood Shopping Center and we were in line. And usually when you put your kid on Santa's lap, Santa will ask you what you want. He'll say it very loud so the parents can hear, right? So I told Santa, I said, he's like, what would you like, Alana? And I said, I want a stage. And he's like, oh, that's so cute. A stage for Barbie? I'm like, no, Santa, a stage for me. I like little twinkling lights and I want satin curtains and I want the whole nine yards. And my mom and dad thought it was so funny that one of my father's best friends was a carpenter. And so he went to the American Home Shopping Center in Downey and went and bought all this plywood, and they made this little tiny stage for me for Christmas. And it had—
How wonderful.
Yeah, these twinkling lights. My mom and dad were just so entertained by the fact that I wanted to be an entertainer. They thought it was hysterical.
You have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have a sister who's 11 years older than myself. She's a psychologist. And she is, you know, it's really interesting. She sort of becomes an expert at everything she puts her hands on. She had a restaurant for a while, and she was like, I think I want to go into psychology. So now she's a psychologist. It's amazing. She's damn good at everything she does. I mean, I've, you know, acting is the only thing I know how to do, is walking and talking. That's what I can do. But my sister, I owe a lot of my, you know, sort of style to her. She was a hip cat when I was growing up. This is a young girl who was listening to like Grace Jones and Iggy Pop and Lena Lovitch and, you know, hanging out with Adam Ant. Granted, we lived in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
so my
sister
was like, she was very beautiful and she was very, very worldly and was already traveling when she was like 16, 17. And, you know, she had been to Greece with her boyfriend and back. I mean, she was really sophisticated. So she had a lot to do with you know, how my taste sort of evolved.
Sure.
And thinking to myself, wow, I really want to do punk rock work with what I do. It should be edgy and character driven rather than just, you know, being a lead and playing yourself. To me, that seemed really just not very creative. It was something that I thought, well, how can I become like the Iggy Pop of actors? You know what I mean? Or like this, you know what I mean?
It's so funny because
of actors.
Jesse and I were talking while driving over here about she calls you a young character actress.
Oh, thanks.
And thanks. So she nailed it then, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I shouldn't say this, but I it's how, you know, maybe I need like mental flossing, but I am in no way interested in being the lead unless, I mean, the pressure of being a number one on the call sheet mm-hmm. is so frightening to me.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't imagine, like, you know, Zendaya or sure. Lisa Edelstein.
Sure.
You know, these are the people that I saw that were, like, lived on set.
Right.
And, you know, the pressure and just the stamina that you have to have, the energy, the stamina of being in almost every scene, I couldn't imagine.
Waiting has got to be the closest.
Yeah.
Because you're an ensemble and you guys are all on, for a lot of the movie, it's
yes,
all of you.
Absolutely.
But at least it's all of you.
There you go.
You know, it's a group.
But then, you know, you definitely were relying on Justin Long to
sure.
really be the
sure,
Pied Piper
sure.
of
sure.
of the movie. And that's, you know, I think it's so admirable to me to see people just absolutely fine playing their authentic selves. And that's something that is really hard to accomplish. Mm. So for me, it's like, I'll just be someone else. It's so much more.
So what
fun.
Happened at age 13? Did you start going on auditions?
When I was a kid, my sister was like a ballerina when she was a teenager, and my mom asked me, she said, well, Alana, if you love to perform so much, maybe going to a ballet class might be cool. And I said, absolutely, I'd love to. I had seen this the Nutcracker, I think it was the Nutcracker with Gelsey Kirkland, and it was on PBS or something. And I thought, oh, wow, let me try that. And so I realized I was very small compared to the other ballerinas, mm-hmm. that I would not have a chance in ballet unless I became a gymnast, and I wasn't interested in gymnastics or anything, but I loved to perform. We'd put on these productions of like the Nutcracker and Cinderella and all of these, you know, great ballets at the Civic Center in Bellflower, and I loved to perform. So my mom, I kept telling her, you know, I want to do this professionally. I want to do this professionally. And finally, we had seen this ad, and it said, you know, the Lee Strasberg Theater Institute has a young people's program for the summer. And, you know, you could take singing classes and acting classes and performance classes. So once I joined the Lee Strasberg Institute, I was 10, and I had found my sphere. I mean, even, you know, all the kids I went to school with, they were all so weird and unique and really super confident. And they were sophisticated kids. A lot of these kids were living in, you know, the, you know, Hollywood. And my mom would schlep me from Downey to, you know, Fairfax and Hayworth every Saturday.
God bless parents.
Yeah. Right?
Who are willing to do that.
Sure. I mean, she was, you know, it's funny, but I think my excitement, my enthusiasm was infectious to my family. You know, when a kid is enthusiastic about
yeah.
something, it's like, oh, wow, okay, cool.
Also following through.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's more than just, I want to do it. You really wanted to do it.
Sure.
And that can be exciting for them.
Well, it was.
But that is wonderful. They were the way they were.
Yeah, it was. And I think it was just like, well, let's see if this sticks and let's see if she, you know, really enjoys it. And so I would play a conehead in the first production at the Strasberg Theater, and Lance Lane wrote the play. It was called Attack of the Yuppie Aliens. Granted, it was the 80s. So, of course, Attack of the Yuppie Aliens, right? But I played this conehead, and Sophia Loren's kids were in the program, Eduardo and Carlo, and mm-hmm. and you had all these child actors, these young sons and daughters of very famous actors. And I think I had played the conehead, and I got a ton of laughs, and it was very silly. But I remember going out to the lobby, and Al Pacino was there, and he had a buddy of his. You know, he'd been in the actor's studio for years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So a buddy of his was probably, I think, directed the show. And he went up to me, and I remember he was just like, I just wanted to tell you, you really made me laugh. I think it's very important you keep doing this. And my mom and dad were like, you know, this cavelling, listening to Al Pacino say that about their kid. And I don't know what came over me. I was so excited that I broke out into like a scene in Scarface for him. And I was like 10. And I think I said something like, you know, Al Pacino, my wife. Hello, me sopa loaded. He was like, oh my God, what are you doing watching that movie? I was like, my mom and dad love that movie. Of course they saw it. He was like, oh my God, get out of here. And he walked away. He was probably really disturbed. But I guess I think when you're not embarrassed to just throw it all out there. And I think that's something that my parents really were aware of. They were like, oh, okay, I guess she's going to be an actor, you know, and that's basically what happened. There were agents in the audience, right? There were children's agents. So they were scouts. And then that's when I signed on to a children's agency, Natalie Rawson, and then, you know, went along. But yeah. I was reading something about Jack Black, and he was talking about how he'd signed with the Jack Rose agency. I was like, that's the agency that turned me down when I was like, you know, a kid. Yeah, he went with Jack Rose. He was probably really, wow. No wonder he's on the up and up. He was on the up and up at such an old age. But yeah, I mean, you know, to be a child actor and know that it comes to an end and you have to start all over again in your 20s and again in your mid-30s is something that's really exciting and scary at the same time.
I would think.
Sure.
It's sort of like if you show someone a photo of Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go, oh my God, that man's beautiful.
What a beautiful,
like not even handsome.
Beautiful man.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And then you think about what it must be like to be in a movie like Bullworth.
Right.
Or anything that's current and how that has to feel to sort of go live that shift.
Yeah.
Of being leading man, gorgeous, amazing, and then you become the grandpa, or you become the dad, whatever it is.
Right.
It's such a shift.
It's a major shift, and you can only hope that people like, well, Clint Eastwood and Brad Pitt, where they basically say one day, okay, all right, well, I'm not exactly the you know, the pretty 19-year-old, pretty young boy in his, you know, 20s.
Yeah.
But I love movies, and I certainly know what. I you know, they have great taste, and you know, I can produce, I can put my name on something, I can open up a production company, I can direct, I can write my own things, and they've done incredible work.
Yeah,
it's so cool, you know, just sort of embracing all of the, mm-hmm. you know, the ability to become seasoned, to embrace life and all of the things that happen in your personal life as you're aging, and saying, well, I still have a lot to say.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I think there's something to be said about aging and you know, from a pretty boy to, you know, a seasoned older man and being able to embrace that it's mm-hmm. just, it's such a, it's so inspiring.
As you have embraced your mom phase.
Yeah.
Albeit your kind of mom.
Yes. kind of mom.
Certain
sure.
kind of mom.
Sure.
So listen, so you're an adolescent.
Yeah.
You start working and going on auditions.
Right. I never booked a thing. I didn't book anything I wouldn't book anything for about 3 years.
Man.
I booked this one pilot. It was an Aaron Spelling pilot, and that's how I got Taft-Hartley. That's how I was given my union card.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
a big deal.
Big deal, yeah. Victoria Principal.
Which means Screen Actors Guild.
Yes. Yes. And then I didn't get anything for a couple of years, and this science show came on, and it was, I heard that it was from the same people that were involved with Pee-wee's Playhouse, and I thought, what? Okay, this is cool. My kind of science.
Yeah.
There you go. And I remember just being as silly and wacky as possible, and it worked. It worked. So I thought, well, maybe there's something to be said about you know, just doing what I really enjoy, which is being weird.
Yeah.
And a little off kilter. And
now, during all this time, were you going, to school, a regular school?
Yes. Yes. I was going to, I went to St. Mark's, and then I graduated this Episcopalian school in Downey. And then it was between Marlborough Girls' School or L'Elysée Francais. And L'Elysée Francais is a French school, and they were very cool Europeans, you know.
It's like conveniently located right by Fox.
Right, hey, there you go. Right by Sony. But they were it was a very small school and great college prep schools, a lot of AP classes, but the teachers were also willing to work with you if you would be working. So they would.
Oh, that's great.
It was amazing. So they would format certain tests for you to take. And, you know, and then I remember being in New York and doing a play, and my teachers would FedEx me assignments because, you know, the internet didn't exist back then. But then I would FedEx it back, and I still graduated and got accepted to colleges. It was still very, you know, it was
easy. Some schools resolutely will not do that.
No, yeah. Marlborough would not, which is why I didn't go there.
Yeah, so you made a good choice.
Well, it's very weird. To decide that you want to be a child actor is kind of weird. It's a strange thing. But it wasn't so strange because I was living in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference.
You're not by yourself in it.
That's it.
And even being able to find a school, I don't know how many school in the rest of this country or anywhere else would say, oh, yes, of course you're in a play, so let me help you figure things out.
There you go.
It's very different.
Yeah, New York, Los Angeles, yes. Yeah. There you go.
So many kids at my school would disappear for months on end.
Oh, wow.
And you just got, I went to
Where
Buckley.
Where they go? Oh, there you go, Buckley.
You just got used to it. People would just disappear. But the one I have to, so one kid went away, and he was gone for, I think, 3 months. And he came home, and he had no hair. And we all thought, oh my God,
he's dying.
Did he have cancer? What the hell happened? Right. It's terrifying. And he couldn't tell us anything. He was playing young Dr. Evil. He was in the second movie as young Dr. Evil. But my God, all of us were like, oh shit, Josh is really sick.
Oh my God, this is terrible.
He was gone and nobody knew why he was gone. He was gone for so long, and he comes back. He was playing young Dr.
Oh, wow.
That still, to this day, when we all found out, we're like, you could have just, here we are planning, like, oh, God, what now? Right. And you could have just said, I'm an actor, guys. I just went into the movie. Yeah.
This town is so weird.
Very funny memories like that. Yes.
Right. Yeah. There you go, Buckley. What a great school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard, but good.
Yeah. Hard, yeah? Yeah? Yeah, I bet. I bet. Boy.
So, and then you did briefly go to college.
Yes, I went to USC for approximately 12 minutes.
I went to San Francisco State for 17 minutes.
There for 17 minutes. Oh, yeah. Wow, you beat me.
I know, right? He's a USC teacher. He teaches there.
Really?
Yep.
Do you know Dr. Casper? Is he
still? Oh, yes. Sure.
Oh, he's an institution.
Right on.
It wouldn't be Drew USC Casper. If Drew Casper was.
Oh, his classes. I lived for them. Mm-hmm. I loved him. I remember doing like a thesis on Jaws, and then it was Victor Victoria. But he was just so passionate about it. It was wonderful. And, you know, I was so naive as a kid. I thought, well, you know, if I'm getting these, you know, movie of the weeks, these Lifetime movies of the week, that I'm really going places. And I would drop out and then, you know, and then I would re-enroll. And my father sat me down and he said, look, this is getting very expensive. Mm. You either drop out and do what you do and ask a lot of questions. He said, and you read at least the paper every day or something. Mm. He was like, or you finish school and you don't work for 4 years. But this is going to cost us a fortune.
Yeah.
And that was music to my ears because I thought, I think I'm just going to ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And I regret it? Sometimes. Sometimes I do.
Sure.
And, you know, my husband, he's a Northwestern graduate, and he always says, can we lie to our son and you can say that you finished USC? and I thought, yeah. Yes, I will.
As an adjunct professor, I think you have the ability, Daddy. You just tell him, yes, you did.
Yes.
You graduated.
There you go. Yep. I'll be giving you a call.
Yep.
Okay. Hold on. I need you to talk to someone. My son has questions.
So, but yeah, it was interesting.
Again, that's a big choice to make.
It's a huge choice to make.
But at 18,
that's a lot.
I don't know if it was the right choice to make, but I do know that had I not dropped out, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to constantly work. And that was when indie films were becoming very popular,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
And you could be an unknown and you could be cast in things. And I started doing a lot of independent films and I wasn't making anything. But just to me, that was my film school, was doing all this, those indie films and being on the set and realizing that, wow, 17-hour work days are sometimes mandatory for a certain shot. Mm-hmm. These steady cams and the dolly grip, and he's the person that you really want to make friends with here, and the lighting techs, and how you to be immersed in it and thrown into, you know, the belly of the whale is the way you have to, you know, learn how to swim, I think. It's real life school.
Yeah.
The School of Hard Knocks. And I regret it sometimes, and sometimes I don't. So you never know.
We're here now.
No,
there
but
you
that's,
go.
But it's not just life school. It is film school.
Yeah, sure.
Because what you've just described about the workings of a set, the interactions of the people on a set,
right,
and why they matter,
right,
and why you matter as a cog in that wheel, and all of that,
right.
That's
even just
crucial.
Finding out what they do.
Yeah,
sure.
A lot of people have no clue what any of Dolly. You know,
if you don't know
what a dolly is, I remember being a little kid
dolly
and seeing Best Boy, Best Girl, seeing Dolly and thinking, I don't know what these are, but
right.
they sound adorable. Like, that's, you know, Best Boy. I'm thinking Best Boy. That must be the guy who's the best boy on the set. That's logically what that is. Dolly. I'm like, what? You get a dolly?
Right.
That's awesome. You know, that's...
Now,
Do
you remember any
hysterical.
Actors who impressed you in particular?
When I was a kid, I was really drawn to the unknowns not the household names.
Right.
Sure.
So, you know, you develop, I think taste is innate. Whatever you're drawn to, it's just like some people love oranges, some people love apples to snack on. For me, I really loved, I remember watching Shoot the Moon when I was a little girl and seeing Dana Hill in Shoot the Moon and thinking, who is this little girl? How can someone that young give such an in-depth performance? And my mom was such an avid reader. She said, oh, apparently Dana Hill was a lot older playing younger. Isn't that interesting, Alana? I'm like, oh, okay. And and then seeing the movie The Player and wanting to know who Richard E. Grant was because that one monologue where he pitched the movie, everything glows like Japanese lanterns. And I thought, who is this guy? You know, to me, I was sort of attracted to these unknowns. But I, you know, what I always thought to myself is, if this young girl from Downey knows about these actors, clearly I'm not the only one who knows about them, and they are working. And to me, watching like Tatum O'Neill and Quinn Cummings was another one, and seeing. You know, I remember watching Jaws and being so excited about Quinn, the character, more than anyone else. And really, you know, loving the mother's performance in Poltergeist. They used Jo Beth Williams. Wow, is she interesting. And then watching, you know, The Big Chill. But my mom and dad were comfortable enough, they were confident enough knowing that their kid was sophisticated enough to handle these movies.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it was the 80s. And, you know, that's what you did. If you took a kid to, you know, it was no big deal for my dad and my sister to drag me to Halloween. To watch Halloween when I was like six. But
you didn't sleep for a year.
I didn't sleep for seven years.
Yeah.
But it was fine. But it was funny to, you know, I so enjoyed listening to my dad and my sister discuss the movie when I was in the back seat on the way home. When she said, Dad, what did you think? He was like, well, I thought the music is what made it. And these were just people who weren't in the business.
Sure.
These weren't film critics, but they were really drawn to, it affected them in such a way where I thought, I want to be a part of that affects my family this way,
mm-hmm.
you know?
So then starting to work on sets yourself,
Yes.
Are there any actors who really struck you while you were working with them or observing them?
Oh, sure. I mean, to me, it was, I worked on a movie called Airborne when I was a little kid, and it was about rollerblading. And I remember Seth Green played my boyfriend in the movie. And I remembered him from radio days. And now, like, the trajectory of his career to me is fascinating, because he started off as just a baby, and how he's still working. You know, he was someone who I had always admired, and then I was finally working with him, and his work ethic was incredible. And he was such a sharp kid. It was very clear to me that he would be, you know, he was a highly intelligent child. So he would probably be good at anything he dabbled in. But one thing that I really, I mean, meeting Reese Witherspoon, apparently she was bored at Stanford and she dropped out. These are highly intelligent people. Jodie Foster, you know, these are people that really do, you assume that they would probably be good at anything they did. You know, the real artists to me, like Danny DeVito, for instance, you can talk to him about anything. You can talk to him about, you know, the Chinese immigration, and you know, you can talk to him about, you know, modern literature. He can talk to you about anything. He's just, he's it's obvious he leads a very full life, and it shows in his work. So meeting, it just turned out when I did meet the Fockers, and you meet Barbara Streisand and Robert De Niro and Dustin Hoffman, he reminds you of those theater geeks in college. They still have that same enthusiasm that kids have when they're performing. It's, you can't believe it hasn't gone away. There's nothing jaded about these A-listers I've worked with. There's nothing jaded about them. I think publicity is what makes them sometimes jaded.
Yeah.
I think it's how it's spun on the internet or what have you. But these people that seem untouchable are some of the nicest people ever. You know, these were people, I remember Angelina Jolie, who was Angie Voight at the time, went to Strasbourg. She was painfully shy. But now in retrospect, I look back and she was just a young girl who was observing. She was just observing. And it was, she was a real artist as a kid. I mean, she'd come in with like all of her little rings on, and she was only like 13, 14, and with her giant lips and these big, huge eyes. And what came across as shyness was actually a very highly intelligent little girl just watching and absorbing everything that was around her. It was really, you know, it's interesting to meet these people that are sort of glorified or made to be, you know, they're named
larger than life.
Larger than life, untouchable, behind their gated communities. You know,
I always love the Us Weekly section of Stars They're Just Like Us, where it's like, John Hamm takes out the trash. So and so pumps gas.
They do. They walk and talk. They drink coffee.
That's it. Right. Yeah, I do love it. I love every time. Zac Efron getting gas at the mobile station. You're like, Zac Efron
what?
Has a car? He doesn't float from location to location? What are you talking about? It's so great. Now, I can't imagine doing something like Sister Act 2 then, where you're put into a school situation and that there's a ton of young people.
Yeah.
I'm always...
Yeah.
So many of them disappeared.
Yeah.
There are so many good people in that movie. On the young, I mean, the whole cast, obviously. Well, the monks and everybody else, but...
Ask me about anyone. I'll be able to tell you what's up.
Try to research them.
Sure.
I mean, all your rappers, everybody in there. Yes. They're such interesting guys. And
yeah.
They just didn't... Even the young man who has the big solo, what's it? He's the other lead singer.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
He changed his name. He's the one.
Right.
That's my slave name.
Yeah, of course.
I can't even think of it.
I know who you're talking about.
But all of them, so many people in there that you would think, you're obviously, you never stop working, but you had Jennifer Love Hewitt, who, tiny part.
Yeah.
You know, she's there to be pretty.
Absolutely.
That's her thing. She's supposed to be that.
And she's
her
kind
lines
of
are like, can we put makeup on?
Can we put makeup on?
You know,
on?
Like, yeah. like that's her thing. And yeah. she's like, are we going to have time for this? Or, this doesn't look good on me.
Yeah.
And she's one of the ones who stayed.
Well, I think the people that did sustain a career were the people that were not tied to labels, tied to music labels. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
interesting.
There you go. We weren't like, you know, scooped up by a label and said, you're going to be the next Madonna, you're going to be the next, you know, I don't know, you're going to be the next LL Cool J. I mean, whatever they would compare them to. But these kids weren't initially actors. They were entertainers.
Interesting.
And they had great voices. And I think maybe, I'm just assuming that they probably got scooped up by labels and they were given one chance. Unfortunately, as a recording artist,
right.
you're given one chance and it's all on you. And if the record sales don't do well, then, you know, you're sort of a mm-hmm. flash in the pan, unfortunately. Whereas in acting, if a movie you do is a big flop, it's not on you.
Yeah.
It's everything that has a lot to do with it.
Especially if you're not the star.
Exactly. Yeah. When you are, which is why, you know, Fugees, Lauryn Hill's Fugees, it was like catching lightning. But for them, she won the lotto.
Mm.
I mean, she was a part of a band that was very zeitgeisty.
Mm-hmm.
And what did she do? They spun it because she was just so beautiful. And she had such an interesting, unique, sophisticated voice for a child.
Yeah.
That they were able to sort of groom her into becoming, you know, Ms. Lauryn Hill. And it also, I think, you know, being a part of the whole Marley, you know, planet.
All of it.
Really,
of it.
Adds more to the mystique of being Lauryn Hill. So I think that is what people really gravitated toward. But, you know, you have something like Sister Act 2 that is sort of, these kids were hoping to be a launching pad to a music career.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And music careers are just so short-lived.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the life of an athlete.
And
did you always sing?
I was just one of those, like, you know, singing lessons, then ballet lessons, then acting lessons.
Sure, sure.
And I never really took it seriously, you know, because I would go to New York and then I'd hear these kids live and I'd be like, oh, wow, well, they really have exercised that muscle. I'm a little rough around the edges. But, you know, you're not given as much opportunity to sing living in Los Angeles as I would have been
sure.
if I lived in New York. So that's the reason behind that.
But you get to sing in one of the greatest movies of all time, goddamn.
Oh, yeah, yeah, hey.
That has stuck with so many of us.
Absolutely.
Did you see that Lizzo just performed and did a tribute?
No.
Lizzo just performed at the MTV Movie Awards and did a tribute to the Joyful, Joyful number.
Oh, that's so cool.
Where she says, Lizzo says, take off your robe. She starts in a robe singing. Then they do the harmonizing and the vocalizing. You watch it on YouTube and just have a laugh.
That's amazing.
Because it stays.
That's unbelievable.
You know?
Yeah. You never ever know. I mean, cut to like years later and I was pregnant, very pregnant. And I got a call from the Lee Unkrich, who directed Coco.
Yes.
He's someone you guys have to like interview.
We like Lee very much.
Oh, do you know him?
Lee used to be the projectionist.
What?
In the theater at USC where I teach my
what?
Class.
What?
Isn't that crazy?
Yes. And where Drew Casper does his class too.
Get out of town!
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, he's just so
Lee,
delicious.
Lee came to the class with Coco.
Lee brought Coco to class.
Oh my God.
Which is a beautiful film. Oh, and congratulations.
Thank you. they had asked me to sing in it, and I was like, oh, wow, what an opportunity. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, just to reverse just for a moment, how did you get into voice acting? Because you've been doing that a long time.
Yes.
Coco is just the latest and most prominent example of that. But you started doing that a long time ago.
That's a great question, and I'll tell you what happened. I was not working a lot. I mean, it's like the Pamela Adlon story.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
I got little bit parts in indies and stuff, but I wasn't making a lot of money. And my manager had a client over at Vox. Vox is a voice artist agency. And she had said, Alana, you know, you might want to try voiceovers. And I thought, yeah, let's try it. And lo and behold, I just started getting callbacks for little boys, constantly little boys. And I thought, oh,
But it was so much fun because I thought, wow, I get to mimic all the cartoon characters that I fell in love with when I was growing up. I mean, I was addicted to Merry Melodies.
Yeah, of course.
Addicted.
Of course.
I mean, I know like all the dialogue to most of the cartoons. So to me, it was
look
like
at his face. That's music to his ears.
Oh
right
my
there.
God!
That's a
are
happy
you
man.
Kidding?
Please,
I'm gonna test you.
Don't get me started.
Do you know what this? I was just watching it the other day, and I just couldn't stop cracking up. My son was looking at me like I was out of my mind. But Little Red Riding Hood, mm-hmm. when she turns out to be.
We sing this around her, just so you understand. We walk around singing that rather frequently.
With her saddle Oxfords. What a perfect part. Anyway, you get to be silly when you're doing voiceovers. So
yeah.
I started working a lot, and that's how, you know, I was able to
I'm
eat
sorry. Now you got
when
that
I wasn't working.
Hey, Grandma!
Hey,
Grandma!
What you got big, such big eyes for, Grandma?
What you got such big eyes for?
Oh, God. So good.
Yeah.
it doesn't.
I
mean,
the
best senses of humor.
And then later finding out that was Bea Benaderet.
Yeah.
Who I grew up watching on camera.
What?
Playing very sedate, you know, characters.
Wow.
She was Burns and George and Gracie's neighbor on the Burns and Allen show.
No
and then,
way.
And then she was the star of Petticoat Junction.
Oh, you really know.
Oh, well,
yeah. If you get into
really
animation with this one.
Don't scratch this too hard because it goes deep. Anyway. So you got to do it now.
Yes. And then
Pound Puppies was one of the
Pound Puppies
I had Pound Puppies.
Yes,
and
Rango and a lot of them. Boy, Brandy and Mr. Whiskers, and I started doing a little almost, you know, these little spots for, you know, nutrition announces for health announcements for mm-hmm. children, like bananas give me energy just when I need for soccer. So, like a little boy, a little Latino boy running around.
Now, I mean,
did that
so
just
wild.
Spark for
now,
Aristotle?
Bananas
oh,
give me energy.
He's like, I remember this.
When you referenced Pamela Adlon a little while ago, that is, for those who don't know.
She's Bobby Hill.
She was Bobby Hill on King of the Hill.
Yeah.
Why? Because they realized that if they hired a real 12 or 13-year-old boy, his voice would change at some point.
Yes.
And it was much more reliable to hire an adult to do that voice, and they could always do that voice.
Yeah.
Right.
Bart Simpson is played by a girl.
There you go.
Minds.
Yes.
So you were Manny
Absolutely.
Rivera.
Manny Rivera and El Tigre
mm-hmm.
for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of my first big thing where I was, you know, playing, you know, the lead on this little this little show on Nickelodeon, playing this little boy. And I couldn't believe how fun it was. That was back in the days where all of the voiceover actors would be in one studio and we'd all be acting off of each other. What a fun gig. You can wear your PJs to work. It is awesome.
Yeah. And that's like doing a radio show. Because you're all there as an ensemble.
You're there as an ensemble.
Whereas in feature
right.
films, we've been doing a lot of...
We've had quite a few lovely voice folks on.
In feature films, they generally record you separately, individually.
There you go. Yes.
Which I'm sure has its benefits.
Right.
Certainly for production. It's good for them.
It's a very solitary.
Yeah. But it's got to be a little tougher for you, I would say.
Sure, mm-hmm. sure.
Now, for those who don't know, you are the matriarch in Coco.
Yes.
That is a heck of a role.
Oh, that was so much fun. It was just another audition because nowadays you can record your auditions on your iPhone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can record it and email it down.
Times have changed,
That's right. Yeah. And when they had sent me the audition, I read it. And, of course, you know, it's like Fort Knox at Pixar. They're very, very, very secretive about what they're, you know, presenting.
Sure.
And so I assumed that – I was like, why is this woman mad about her photo not being on an ofrenda? But – is she at the DMV? What's going on? Like, why is this your photo? I don't understand. I was like, no, just I think she's upset that she's at the DMV or something. And I was reading it aloud, and my husband was in the other room, and he heard me. And it took him hearing what the dialogue was, and he came and he was like, Alana, she's dead.
Hey.
She's dead. He was like, it's almost like Beetlejuice, I think. Maybe she doesn't realize she's dead or something, but yeah, I think this might be a Day of the Dead movie. I was like, nah, it's not going to be a Day of the Dead movie. It turns out.
Day of the Dead movie.
Day of the Dead. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
And that movie, it means a lot.
My God.
To a lot of people. And I'm sure Hispanic family all over the damn place is thrilled.
Unbelievable.
Because it broke all kinds of records in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
It was, it became the number one movie in Mexican history to be made. It really did tug on everyone's heartstrings. And I think it was just, it's such a perfect time, obviously, mm-hmm. because we were, you know, obviously, unfortunately, we've been under such scrutiny, mm-hmm. you know, these past couple of years, mm-hmm. and for us to have a movie that finally shines the light on the sophistication of the culture mm-hmm. is so important, because very few people know it. It's not just about sugar skulls and
right,
tacos.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
What do you mean it's not just sugar skulls? Right? Oh, yeah, there's a whole meaning, and it's
and
beautiful.
You had already worked with Jorge Gutierrez.
Yes.
You know, from Manny Rivera, who made Book of Life.
Yeah. And that was the other
animated movie about Day of the Dead.
There you go. Yeah. And that was about that was just a masterpiece. And I think what Coco did was it brought everyone could relate to it, because it was all about the importance of family and being mm-hmm. remembered.
Sure.
And everyone's biggest fear, I think, is to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. So that it really did touch a lot of people. I'm so proud of that movie.
Being raised with a Salvadorian mamita, which is why he's mamita.
Mamita, sí.
The flying sandal bit.
Oh, yeah, the jungle.
I was honestly on the floor. I was laughing so hard. And as soon as I came home, I went to my mamita and I was like, you have to see this movie. You're going to die. Because she was absolutely the sandal you had to be afraid of. That
really?
Thing. Oh, God, yes.
I love it. That's hysterical.
I'm thrilled that you're in it. And especially, as I say, for your family, that gets to be something very special.
So special. Absolutely. You know. And something I could show my son.
Absolutely. Of course. But there's another one where we're talking about these roles that for different generations, and depending on how old you are,
yes.
that's a big deal. And that's going to be a movie where when someone's 20 or 30, they go, oh, God, that was my favorite film growing up. I loved it so much. And that's how they know you.
It's wild.
Yeah.
That's something. Yeah.
Speaking of recognition, you have been on a number of TV shows.
All of the TV shows.
Yeah.
And, well, guest stars, innumerable TV series, but as regular characters or recurring characters.
Sure.
You've been on a number of right now you're on Euphoria.
Which is
a big deal.
Getting a lot of heat.
Yeah, exactly. And you were on Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce.
Yes.
Well, for several years. I mean, so when you're on a TV show that's kind of hot, do people recognize you at the grocery store, at the gas station? I mean, do you get a different level of recognition than you do doing movies or an occasional guest shot here or there?
You know, the thing about living in Los Angeles is, and I have a feeling this is what happens, before someone gets a job in a coffee shop or in a record store or at a department store or at the grocery, at the market, what have you, I think they're so used to seeing, you know, recognizable faces coming in and out. They're just jaded. So do I ever get recognized? I'll get approached by usually an actor. Mm-hmm. Someone who is just starting out, who will come up and say, I really like your work, whatever, and I will have a conversation with them. I will talk their ear off. They have to, like, peel themselves out of my, you know, eyesight for me to stop talking. But it's a lot of fun to get recognized and approached.
But you have a lot to share. You have a lot to teach people, you know.
Hey, I mean, it's but I find myself when I'm in Ohio visiting my mother-in-law, I don't get recognized. Maybe at the airport, but, you know, I guess it's – I'm at this point in my career where I'm one of – oh, that's the girl from.
Sure.
Oh, that's that woman who was in mm-hmm. – did I go to school with her?
I found this out. That's the thing about television, as opposed to being Brad Pitt on a giant 60-foot – screen in the theater.
Right.
You're in their home.
They know you, but they don't know why.
Yeah. Right.
So he gets, were you a librarian in blank Tennessee? And he has to go, no that's not what they, well, what do I know? And he said, I'm a film critic.
Right.
And they go, oh, and I've been there for a bunch of my actor friends where someone's like, excuse me, but do I know you for, and they have to then, and then you'll end up reading your entire IMDb to someone.
Yes.
They go, maybe you saw me in Legally Blonde. No, never seen that movie. Maybe from the... No, it's not that either.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. No, I usually ask them their age. I was like, this is a very rude question. How old are you? Oh, I'm a... You know, I'm 31. Yeah, you know me from waiting. They're like, that's it. You know what I mean? But if the woman is like, may I ask how old you are? She was like, I'm 45. You know me from Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce.
That's right.
That's so funny.
So, if, you know, it's like, you have kids? Yes, Coco. Oh, that's it. Yeah.
So you can play a demographic game right back with
them. I played the demographic game right back.
Name
absolutely.
That demo.
Name that demo, baby.
Wow. Well, that's very canny of you.
I mean, sure is. Also, probably saves time.
It saves a lot
of time. It saves a lot of time, yes.
Yes. I'm always...
Time and embarrassment. All of those things.
Always in the middle of an errand. Always.
So terrible. What are you up to now?
So what's going on? Basically...
You have a two-year-old.
My two-year-old, yes. He's about to turn two July 25th. It's very exciting. My gosh, is he a handful right now. Boy, oh boy.
Is this your first?
He's my first. One and done. One and done, baby.
I get it.
Oh, yeah.
I get it.
So, yes, I've been spending a lot of time with him, which is wonderful. But, yes, Euphoria is something that is on air right now, and I'm really looking forward to a Charles Randolph film about the Roger Ailes debacle at Fox that will be released in December. It's starring Charlize Theron.
I've heard of her.
As Megyn Kelly, yes. And she's phenomenal in this. And I play Jeanine Pirro, the Fox News broadcaster.
That's cool. That's cool.
I'm so jazzed. I'm really excited about it. It's a really wild film. It's still untitled. They don't have a title for the movie, but I some of the scenes are things that we had no idea were going on, will be introduced to. And I know there's something coming out on Showtime that is about the Roger Ailes.
That's the one with Russell Crowe, right?
There you go, starring Russell Crowe. Right. Yeah. And I think Charles Randolph really went in depth and really found out a lot of intel that we know nothing about that we're about to be introduced to come December. I'm excited.
Oi!
Yeah!
All right!
That sounds juicy.
It's very juicy. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll share a story with you when this stops. We're gonna stop recording. But I'll tell you something, you guys. I was blown away by one of the scenes. I couldn't believe that it actually happened, but it did.
Coming to you in December. Woo! That's a perfect cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, very excited about that. So
that you do have your hands full on the domestic front as well as the professional front.
Yes, I do. I do. There's a great show that's going to be coming out called Mythic Quest, and it's from all the boys who brought you It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Mm. And so I'm coming out on that on Netflix, and that's a lot of fun. It's about, oh my God, the video game world, the gamers, and, you know, all of those children from that world. And I knew nothing about the gamer world until this came around. So they're very hush-hush about this. Every project nowadays is very Fortnite.
They have to be. Oh, yeah. They have to be.
Isn't
but
it?
I mean, but now we know you've ticked the most important box. As a working actor in Hollywood, you do have a Netflix show.
Yeah, there you go. Because are you really even real at this point? Are you a human being if you're not somewhere on Netflix?
You're not on Netflix.
Who even are you?
I know. No, isn't that interesting? The White House will be brought to us by Netflix.
Right?
Next
I'm
year.
Waiting.
I'm sure. I'm sure of it.
We always joke that his class, we want to say brought to you by nachos or something like that. Because you know how you go to every arena you go to now. It's
brought
like
to
this
you
is
by Wells Fargo.
Yeah, exactly. So we were saying that one day it's going to be like Cheez-Its are bringing you Leonard Maltin's class at USC. We're going to find somebody. Taco Bell. Taco Bell.
Make a run for the birdie.
That's right.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. So good.
So are you a social mediaite?
Yes. You can find me on Instagram and on Twitter, Alana Eubach. I'm not a schmuck. I do post. I do post a lot of fun things every once in a while. Twitter, I'm not too crazy about. There's just people get so angry on Twitter.
Yes, they sure do.
Oh, it scares me. Yep. But Instagram's a lot of fun because of the pictures. I like the pictures and the funny, fun videos. So yes, you. I promise I will make you chuckle if you log on to my Instagram account. It's
fun. That's a Wonderful Follow me, invitation. Baby.
As for you, Monsieur Maltin, you are at Leonard Maltin. I'm at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff.
And don't forget our merch.
Our merch, TeePublic, T-E-E, Maltin on Movies. We have fun little popcorn-y, created by a bunch of different artists. We like to get as many of our artist friends involved as possible. Go there.
Take a look.
Have Woo! A good time.
Take a look.
Thank you. Woo!
No charge for looking.
Woo!
No charge for looking.
And no charge for listening either. We will see you again next week. And thanks again, Alana.
Thank you.
Maltin on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.